Well, it's the hardest, easy way to make money.
The hardest, easy way.
Yeah.
I thought that was prostitution, sir.
Okay, but I'm not a good-looking woman, so I'm not even a good-looking dude.
You are very handsome. You stop it, sir. So
something like that?
Yeah, if you can get it up. Yeah, I almost like let it touch my lips every now and then. Just so.
Okay, from reminded. Years of gigs, I don't do that.
I know, dude.
At least it doesn't smell like beer.
Exactly. That's right. When they were talking about like COVID and all that, and I'm just like, dude, if you've done any sort of open mics, if you've been a musician, I'm pretty sure you're immune to most of
yeah.
What's coming down the pipe, man.
Like we were jamming on Saturday, and I was like, I just went to open my mouth to sing, and like, oh, whoever was using this mic,
you just got a
spitting all over it and drinking heavily.
One and the same. All right, well, guys, thank you for tuning in to this one.
Oh, we're recording.
We're live, baby. We're live today. My guest is Yod Paul.
Thank you. Thank you.
I know Yod from our line of work. He is a instructor, guitar instructor, bass instructor.
Ukulele,
you stringed instrument. He's a string phenom. You're a guitarist. You've been in rock bands. I've been learning
a lot of bands.
Yeah. I just learned that you're also doing some day trading and have plans to retire on that.
Yeah. So, well, yeah. It's hard to retire on a teacher's salary.
Yes. Yeah. You're molding young minds, as John Palmer would say.
Yeah.
You'd be in there and be like, I'm supposed to be molding young minds right now.
I like that guy.
Yeah, he's cool.
He's correct, though. And I do enjoy the job a lot. So even if I made a lot of money, I'd still be teaching.
Yeah, yeah. So, when did you start teaching?
Maybe 10 years ago.
Okay, okay.
And I shouldn't have waited so long.
Yeah.
It was like I was nervous about doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
Just not enough confidence because I'm self-taught on guitar.
Yes. Right?
But I have classical violin from like 8 to 14, so I knew all this music theory that I didn't know I knew.
Oh, gotcha. Right? Or so, that would translate over in a sense.
Yeah, so I taught myself everything on guitar, and when it was time to like give my first guitar lesson, I was nervous because I was like, well, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to do this. I can play it.
You have the ear for it. Like,
yeah.
Are you one of those guys that I can just show you like a riff and you're just like, okay.
Yeah, pretty much. Go. One of my favorite things to do is when I'm on stage with people, if I sit in with a band and like another guitar player plays a riff, I'll play it back to him. And then he'll, after it takes one or two times, and then he's like, he'll look at me. Like I did that with Mikey Lander.
Okay,
we were up on with Chocolate Fountain, and he's playing these riffs and I'm playing it back. And after a couple of times, he looks at me, he's like, oh, you're doing that. So
almost like that callback.
Yeah.
Yeah, that blues callback.
It's kind of a trip, I think, for people to hear themselves get played back right away.
Yeah, like yeah, that. For sure.
But I love to do that. I love walking into a jam session cold or a studio session cold.
Yeah.
And coming up with something in like the first one or two tries. It's like, I not only is it a personal challenge, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I feel very comfortable doing that.
And do you think like, you know, you can muddy it and like where you give it too many tries, you're like, oh, I really got to nail it. You know, I got to do this. I got to do that. Versus like, just let it come fresh.
My favorite is the one or two takes.
Yeah.
The first couple, like give me one or two run throughs and then one or two takes. And then that's my favorite. But it's not to say that I haven't had a 28 take guitar solo track
how
before.
How does that, at what point?
I just kept messing up and you know, luckily the engineer and the band was patient enough. Yeah. And I did ended up getting it at the end. But for whatever reason, there's only been a couple times where I just keep messing up.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a mental game at that point. You know, mm-hmm. I already know what to do. Your hands know what to do. There's just something gets in your head every once in a while. You know.
Kind of like what maybe held you back from teaching, right? Because a lot of times like maybe. People would expect that, you know, you have to have like certain credentials or certificates, right?
Maybe, but I don't think so. Because like the performing part I've been comfortable with for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And now, like 10 years into teaching, I'm very comfortable teaching. Nice. Right? I have no problem. It was just that first like few months where I was like, I'm not sure if I can do this.
But, yeah.
But it turns out all the stuff that I learned on violin, like all the music theory, and I could still, I was a little slow in the beginning, but I can still read music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like riding a bike that's a guitar.
Yeah.
a guitar bike.
So when you guitar bike, you got to invent that. Was there like some breakthrough moments where you figured something out that you had been struggling with by trying to show somebody else?
Yeah. A lot of that, like in songwriting mostly, like, in songwriting, when you're teaching people the music theory that why a song is good,
yeah,
or how to put the pieces of the music theories, because the music theory is like this puzzle of a bunch of different things that work.
Yeah.
And then what your challenge is to take those pieces and make something out of them.
Yeah.
So like a complete picture out of them, like a song or a movement in a classical piece or whatever. But like a pop song has these elements that make it successful, right? It's got to have the hook. It's got to have these changes. It might, and they can be any number of different style of things. But if you put them together in just the right way, it's like magic. And you have this $1 million song, you know? And like, I've written a lot of $100 songs, but over the years I've written some $1 million songs. It's just, it's kind of like the lottery at that point where the right person's got to hear it or
that's right. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. It's got to hit at the right time too. Cause you come across like certain artists and you're like listening to their work and you're like, how are these guys not any bigger than they were?
And it's totally.
Yeah.
And I've found a bunch of people like that over the years or just, I've never met them, but I love to listen to their music.
Yeah. So. You're just like, what the hell, dude?
Yeah. Why wasn't this band never big?
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest ones. So you started on violin, classically trained. What's the first inclination that made you grab a guitar?
I was visiting my dad for the summer, and I was 14 years old, and his roommate played guitar, and he showed me like 3 chords.
That's all you need.
And so for the month I was there, I just jammed with him and played guitar and learned a couple songs. And then I got back and living with my mom, and I was like... pulled her guitar out of the closet. I was just messing around with it. And she's like, when did you learn how to play guitar?
Yeah.
So she borrowed a guitar and an amp for a year. And I just got obsessed with it. I never touched a violin again after that.
Dang. What was this? A sayonara violin. Damn, dude.
Yeah. I was like, this is it. I'm done.
And was that, you lived in Hawaii for some time, right?
I grew up there.
Yeah. So was that in Hawaii where you were picking that up?
Yeah.
And so, which is why you also instruct ukulele, I would assume, or ukulele just happened to come later?
Ukulele, they teach you in fourth grade.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So that's like the recorder here.
Yeah. Well, they'll teach you recorder and ukulele in Hawaii.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So, whatchamacallit, like, I just always remembered. So I could always just walk into like a thrift store and there's a uke, could pick it up and play some stuff. Mm-hmm. I like always remembered it.
Well, it's also tuned like a violin, right? No,
it's tuned the last 4 strings of a guitar.
Oh, guitar with the high G.
Yeah,
that's right.
But it's like over the years, I never forgot like those basics. You know, I had to, when I started teaching ukulele, I had to like re-memorize some of the other chords, but like C, G, F, and all that stuff was still there and how to strum it, play it, tune it. So...
Bam. Did you do a lot of surfing?
Yes.
You had to, right?
Yes. That's about the only thing to do. So I was surfing, mountain biking.
Wow. The trails are beautiful, right?
Yeah. I would spend all day up in the mountains. I'd get up before the sun and go surf, and then we'd ride bikes up into the mountains, and I'd spend all day up there.
Yeah.
Until like 3-4 in the afternoon, come down and eat, like... just shovel food into my mouth and then
refuel
and then maybe surf again, but probably go to work usually.
Yeah,
but if the surf was good, I'd call out. Everybody does.
Everybody.
It's like
the bosses are
out everybody
there.
Oh, surf's up, bro.
Oh damn, the waves are good, guys. So we better close up shop. They're probably waiting for the waves to hit good too, right?
Everybody's they, like, are, they are they are.
what was one of your first jobs?
I was 11 and I was doing inventory for my dad at his shop.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So, I was 11. Holy shit.
Child labor. Dead.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it child labor if it's family? Yeah. Right?
Yes. They're very lax about that family business. That's the loophole. Yeah. But I don't mind. I learned a lot there. A lot about, cause he owns a health food store.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. And, so I learned a lot about nutrition, a lot about how to run a business. Age.
Hell yeah, man. Those are great lessons to learn at that age.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, they're almost solidified and they're really instilled you know, when you're at a young age, but then seeing it work and being implemented.
Yeah. But that education, like before I started teaching guitar, I just had all kinds of weird, every job from construction to an office to like, I worked a lot at health food stores because I could always get a job at a health food store.
Yeah. Damn, that makes sense. I need to jump into that. I need to get a little bit more, you know, well-versed in that. I try to be, but man.
You know, it's just, I was lucky. What can I say?
Yeah.
And my stepmom's a naturopathic doctor, so.
Nice. Is she still practicing?
Yeah.
Yeah? Whereabouts?
In Hawaii. Yeah, they all live in Hawaii.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So are you out in Arizona on your own, essentially, at this point?
Yeah, I moved out here to finish school.
Uh-huh.
But one of the bands I was in started taking off Emergence.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, fuck school. this is what I wanted to do anyway.
Yeah.
School was like something to fall back on.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Trying to be an engineer.
Yeah.
And the math got real heavy, which like, it's cool. I'm not the best mathematician, but I could kind of hang. I had to work at it a lot, but mm-hmm. I could hang. But yeah, once the band was starting to take off, we were selling out Crescent and stuff. I was just like, okay, yeah, no more school.
Yeah, you gotta send it.
You gotta strike while the iron's hot.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Damn. So,
but it all worked out because even though that band didn't end up getting anywhere huge or anything, you know, it just got me back into music.
Yeah.
Which is where I wanted to be always anyway.
Gotcha. So you were going kind of back and forth between the health side of things, the engineering and music?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the engineering was just because music's hard, emotionally speaking. Like you have a lot of deal with a lot of disappointment.
Yeah.
And for like 20 years, uh-huh. it was a lot of disappointment. So I was just like kind of, forget this, I'll go back to school.
Yeah. What was one of like the roughest ones that
I just bombed a studio session.
Yeah.
And I walked out of there and I'm like, I can't do this again. I don't want to feel this way again.
Uh-huh.
Which like I've also had great studio, like I said, I'm very comfortable.
Yeah.
So that was really like threw me for a loop.
Oh, gotcha.
And it was like I didn't understand what was going on, and again, looking back on it, that was a mental game also.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it's like a set and perform, nail it, you know, like.
Yeah, which most 99% of the time I do. But there was that time and the time right before that.
What do you think you attributed that to? Just was it personal stuff or just your head was out of it?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
A little bit of personal stuff, but also, you know, relationship stuff was going on at the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I had been in LA for 11 years and not really getting anywhere.
Okay. You know? Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I think I need a change. Los Angeles is hard. There's not a lot of, and I have really good friends still there.
Mm-hmm.
And they do it. I just kind of lost heart. That's all.
Yeah, that can be, you know, quickly demoralizing because you go to the big city. You're like, this is LA. This is going to happen. And then next thing you know, you're 5-6 years in and you're like,
and I got work, but I didn't get enough to survive. So I always had another job.
Yeah.
You know, day job. And it wears on you.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And by the time I was like 32, I'm just like, I'm getting old.
Yeah, man.
And now I'm like 50. And I actually feel, physically, I feel just as good as I did back then. But mentally, I'm in a much better place now.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. What do you attribute that to? Did you just...
Just like being comfortable with what the universe gives to you. You know what I mean? And not always wishing I had more.
Wishing and fighting it. And
yeah. Kind of, yeah. And plus, I'm a father now.
Oh,
and so that's like, that's a big difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's 11.
Hey, okay.
Belizia.
Belizia,
mm-hmm.
Nice. Shout out to Belizia. Man, have you as a father, man. That'd be cool, man. Rock star, engineer, surfer, you know? You had a history there. What, is she taking, like, music as well, or is she kind of like
just... Well, I taught her ukulele, and I've been teaching her drums. She really likes the drums.
Yeah.
But she's got choir and trumpet in school, so she's doing really well. She's an honor choir, so...
Gotcha. Heck yeah. So once you found out you're going to be a father, you're like, I got to really focus your sin.
Well, I can't not be a musician.
Yeah, for sure.
You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah. Instead of going, I don't go out anymore unless I have a gig.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
you're not doing much of the hang anymore.
Nope.
Yeah.
It's just not, doesn't interest me.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
I'm going to hang, I'm going to hang with my daughter.
Yeah. Cool. So nobody can fault you for that, man. Yeah. So you mentioned you were in a bunch of bands, man. I mean, at the height, how many bands were you in at once?
At once? I've juggled three projects before at the same time.
Yeah. Dang.
And then had all three of them play the same show. Really? The same night. Yeah.
Dude, what a, talk about overtime.
It's like Stan from Woodworks. He used to do that a lot more. But yes. His own wedding, he played in three of the bands at his wedding.
Of course, man. Stan is a beast. Stan is one of those guys I fell in love with. I remember it was just a weekend of shows. I think I went to two different shows that he was on and killed it.
Yeah.
Killed it. And then I'm just like, here I am, just like you. I see you guys day in and day out come in and you're living, breathing your instrument. And then in the evening, you're performing it for the people. And I was just like, because, you know, you come in and you're teaching it to others. So you're passing on your knowledge, your enthusiasm to that. And then you're still out performing and providing that for everybody out trying to have a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. Stan is definitely the best drummer I've played with. And I've been lucky to play with a lot of really good drummers.
Yeah.
But there's like three that stand out. It's Jason from Mergence.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of those guys, Matt from like LA from years and years and years ago. He was like a human metronome. And then Stan. And Stan is like the conglomeration of feel, aggression, you know, and musicality. It's all balanced super well.
Yeah. And what a brain on him too. He does like a bunch of the video editing for the band and merch stuff. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Drummers get a lot of flack, but like a lot of the most intelligent people I've worked with throughout the years have been drummers.
Yeah. I find that, drummers and bassists make the best like producers.
Yeah. Cause that's what you got to feel on the track. Right. Right. From the, if the foundation isn't right, then
yeah,
a lot of it can fall apart.
So,
have you played bass in a band? I mean,
but it's not. So I know much better bassists.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll fill in. But if I was going to ever start a band, I would hire somebody, any of the number of people I know who are really good at bass.
Yeah, for sure. Do you have any projects on the horizon that nobody knows about you want to drop on this podcast? Oh.
Well, I don't know. I don't have anything specific, but I do have a lot of music written that needs to come out. So trying to put together a team.
Yeah.
You know?
So in your mind, you have the melody and the rhythm.
I got pages of songs, man.
And lyrics.
Lyrics. And lyrics, so hard for everything.
Yeah.
So like, one year I wrote 41 songs.
Holy shit.
And only one of them was bad.
Yeah.
So 40 good songs. Like I said, I write a lot of $100 songs.
Uh-huh.
That year, for some reason, they were like $1,000 and up songs.
Yeah.
They were really good, and a lot of like catchy stuff like Nirvana style, but not mm-hmm. doesn't sound like Nirvana. I don't know.
Gotcha.
And I recorded an EP with the band at the time, Fu, F-U.
F-U.
And I like it was like this cool like quirky poppy punky sound.
Yeah, yeah.
Of stuff that I used to like to listen to in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Yeah, because everybody's taste is just so wide, man. You think an artist is like, oh, you're just into whatever you're on stage playing, and it's like, yeah. No.
And then I have a whole record written of this story. It's kind of like a sci-fi epic.
Okay.
And then so that's got a lot of more somber sounding stuff with like more like soundtracky. Oh,
yeah, soundtracky build up.
A lot more soundtracky. Yeah. And
can I trip out to an album like that?
Yeah, well, it reminds me of, you remember that cartoon Heavy Metal?
Yeah, oh yeah.
So it's like that with good songs,
yeah.
But also has this soundtrack quality to it.
Badass,
so,
man.
And then I got a bunch of kid songs written that I used to write for my kid when she was super little.
No shit.
Yeah, so I got about an album's worth of that. And then what else?
Is it all just sitting on your hard drive or this hard drive?
I read everything on paper.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I phone record. So I got hundreds and hundreds of those little voice memos. But I also write everything down on paper. So cause I've lost hard drives over the years. And so I don't trust that.
Gotcha. You know what I mean?
So I write everything down.
solar flare's coming, man. We'll wipe it all
out.
I know.
You think you're joking, but you're not.
No, it's coming.
I agree. You got your Gauss cage or what is it?
No, I'm ill prepared.
Keep your communications devices in there for when shit hits the fan.
Dude, if I see it coming, I'm like, oh, there it is. Run.
Faraday cage. That's what it is.
Oh, Faraday? Is that what it is?
It protects your electronics from the EMP, from the solar flare.
Yeah. No, it's definitely. We are relying on technology to that extent to where we will be crippled once it happens.
There's a YouTube channel called Suspicious Observers. I've been watching him for over 10 years, and he is spot on about the sun. He's written a textbook called The Weatherman's Guide to the Sun, and it's all about how the sun drives everything on the earth, including earthquakes, climate change, storms.
Yeah. As you'd imagine, like, that it has influence on our magnetosphere, which has influence on our plate tectonics.
It does. And the amount of energy coming into the Earth, because the amount of energy the sun sends our way dwarfs anything that we do. Dwarfs it.
Yeah.
And then the amount of energy funneling in through the magnetic fields into the Earth can increase and decrease the rotation of the Earth, can increase and decrease the volcanic activity, increase and decrease the cloud cover. It's like... To reflect sunlight or let it through. So, like, the sun drives everything.
Yeah.
And, like, our minuscule amount of activity is dwarfed in comparison. So,
exactly.
The reason all the climate scientists say it's us is because they just completely ignore the sun's input.
Yeah.
They take it out of all the models.
And they're just seeing it. And also just negating the fact that it does go up and down and up and down, because we're talking about eons and eons.
Yeah, and we're at a solar maximum period right now. We're heading into one. So the amount of solar flares and everything is going up. So the amount of energy we're getting from the sun is going up. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a great solar maximum. It's somewhere in the middle.
Gotcha.
But it's still on that uptrend. So we're going to have a lot more storms.
To something that we're not used to, especially with our technology nowadays.
Yeah, for the next decade, we're going to have a lot more storms and turmoil as far as climate goes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the sun. And then it'll calm down for a little while, for a decade.
Yeah.
And cool off.
Go through its phases.
Yeah.
Which is scary. That's a little bit scarier, though, right? Like ice ages. Like that's.
I am actually more worried about an ice age.
Yeah, right? Because,
to be honest with you.
Come on. What?
But really, the solar flare, either way, the solar flare is going to take us out, because the grid is not capable of handling. You know about the Carrington event, right?
Is that the, no, I'm thinking about the asteroid that blew up over Siberia. No,
that's Tunguska. But the Carrington event was this solar flare in like the 1860s, and they had just invented the telegraph. So that was the only like modern electric thing that they had. And the amount of energy that came from it was so great that the telegraph wires caught on fire. And like the end of the line where the clicker was, it was like sparking and arcing and starting fires at the end of the line. So that was 150 years ago.
Yeah, no more than
and
two.
They say that happens every 150 to 200 years.
Oh, damn. Okay.
Yeah. And so if something like that happened.
That's why you mean it's right there. It's right around the corner.
And then there's also like huge solar flares that happen that can like flash a major part of the Earth that's facing the sun and completely fry like a good section of the Earth if the solar flare is big enough. And the sun makes those. Like,
sun's like five minutes away, they're around the corner.
You know that, like the SOHO, the observatory, the solar observatory, and the satellites in space? Okay, so there's some video of them. Of the sun shooting off a solar flare that would be an earth kill shot.
But not in our
direction. But it wasn't sent in our direction, so we just lucked out.
Jesus.
But there's several of them since they put the satellites up that just happened to be going off to the side instead of at us.
That's
the luck of the draw.
That's just the nature of just even our existence. It's just, what are the odds that we exist the way we do now?
Yeah, exactly.
But
we're still here. It's all happened before.
Yes.
Right. And we're all still here. Humans are still here. So, I mean, we're not going to go extinct, but
how many times
it's going to get rough. It's going to get rough.
Yeah, it will.
And just hopefully not in our lifetime.
Yeah. Right? I like to think that, I feel like maybe, 500 years to like 1,000 years before anything majorly catastrophic happens. That's
we'll
not
see.
Our fuck up. That's what I like to think.
oh, that's not our fuck up? Yeah, yeah. Well, that might come sooner.
Easily, very easily. Yeah, because the sun is very powerful, man. Because I think that is the next step. You've heard of the Fermi paradox?
Yeah.
So I think that's the next stage, is when we're able to actually harness the power of our home star. Then yeah, we wouldn't need
resources. Get to what is it, a level two civilization? Level two. Mm-hmm. So
either we're approaching the barrier and we might not make it, or we just crossed over to the point where we'll figure that out.
Well, I think they have all of those hidden technologies already in mm-hmm. black projects tied up in the government.
And you think is that so they can monetize it?
What's that?
So they can monetize it and use it for...
I don't know what they got planned, because I'm not invited to that party.
Damn it. You got kicked out already?
None of us are invited to that party. That's the problem. I've thought sometimes that maybe those black projects have gotten to the point where, that they've already have anti-gravity and they've already gone out into space, and like there's already a breakaway civilization.
Oh, that's already in route. Yeah. And they're going to be like, by the way, guys.
In the last 100 years. So when the Earth gets fried by the solar flare, they're all going to be sitting out there in a spaceship going, suckers. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it could be. It's not unrealistic.
Yeah, to keep that hidden. And then to see if it's successful, then be like, hey, guys, you know, we were working on this. We had to keep it under wraps, but we're good.
No, they're never going to tell us.
We learned.
There's no way they're ever going to tell us.
What is it called? The Adam and Eve Project or something? Eden? What do you think they're calling it?
Oh, I don't know.
Has some good names, I'm sure.
I don't know. But all those triangle UFOs, I'm pretty sure, are ours, because our government loves to make triangle things.
Oh, yeah? We're talking about Illuminati?
Exactly.
Yeah. A triangle is one of the most powerful, is it still called? No, it's not called. A pyramid.
Yeah.
A pyramid would be one of the most powerful figures.
But for some reason, like, our engineers like to make, like, flying wings, triangle shape. And, like, look at our planes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bomber, U-2 bomber, and all that stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah, for stealth and all. I mean, I guess you have to base it a lot on like, you know, falconry. I mean, they kind of put themselves in that position.
Yeah, know, sure, but they straight go for the triangles though. That's why I'm thinking like a lot of the triangle UFOs are probably government.
Were you around for the famous one here?
No, I didn't live here yet, but I've just a few years ago I saw one here.
Yeah.
And me and the guy I was talking to, we both saw it. It made the news.
Yeah.
And it looked like one of those like falling stars with sparks coming out of it. And then it stopped and kind of hovered around. Honestly, it looked like skydivers, right? With flares on their ankles. Yeah, yeah.
Wait, I saw one like 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's the same one we're talking about. I mean, actually, mine was maybe like 5 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
But the thing was, I would have thought it was skydivers.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what it looked like. The Black Hawks came out, and for 2 hours, they patrolled back and forth in that same area. So I was like, well, shit.
And what do you think they got told? Hey, go out and look for things. What are we looking for? We can't tell you.
I don't know.
Report back what you see.
I know, but that's the kind of thing that makes you go, hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Because if it was just the lights by itself, I would have passed it off as a skydivers. But when the military came out and was patrolling for like 2 solid hours looking for whatever it was, I was like, okay, well, that wasn't us. You know, and it wasn't somebody filing a flight plan. So
damn. How do you sleep that night?
I don't know. But we were recording a record right there, so that was a nice 2 hour break before we had to go back in the studio.
Not only that, but I don't know. Do you go back in with like some inspiration? Like, hey, maybe they were trying to come down and listen to some good old rock and roll, dude.
Maybe. I don't think they care.
No,
I don't think the aliens care about my records.
Oh no. All right. So yeah, I guess you just go to sleep. Put the butt plug in and then go to sleep, man. That way they don't. What do you think that fascination is from? Why is always rectal examinations like the go-to thing?
I don't know.
That people bring up.
I don't know. Ask Cartman. He's the one with the radio dish up his ass.
That's too funny, man. So what about so since we're on kind of like, you know, trippy things that people are not sure are real or not, Bigfoot. You like the idea of Bigfoot?
I do like the idea of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
In fact, the whole cryptid thing, I kind of like the idea of. I haven't really seen any evidence to convince me one way or the other, but mm-hmm. there's definitely some head scratchers out there. In fact, whether this is Bigfoot or not, missing 411, if you like
okay.
mysteries.
Is it a website or?
Well, it's probably a website, but
yeah.
But that's like, this guy did a whole investigation on national parks, and the more people, more people go missing in national parks, like hundreds of people a year go missing in national park, but they are either not found or they're found in weird ways, like 100 miles away without shoes on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, they couldn't have walked that far.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially without shoes.
Yeah. No.
And then all kinds of weird stuff like that. It's just, it's the missing 411. So
yeah, I've heard of that. Where they, I think the part that I heard was that there's probably like, trafficking tunnels, you know,
like people, a family will be on a hike and the dad will go around the corner and then disappear. Or he'll turn around and his kid is gone, and even though he was like 20 feet behind him on the trail.
Mm-hmm.
And then they search for hours and hours and hours, and they find the kid 10 miles away, like that evening. And it's like...
Most of the time, are they unharmed or are they...
No, they'll find him dead.
Oh, shit, dude. God damn.
And that's what I'm saying. It's really messed up and weird. It's like Skinwalker kind of stuff.
Oh, right? Skinwalker? Dude, don't give me chills right now, man.
Yeah. Or it's the reptilians who live in the caves under the national parks.
Reptilians, for whatever reason, don't give me the
chills. I'm not too worried about them.
Skinwalker type shit.
Because you ever seen a lizard with thumbs? Like, they don't exist. So I'm not too worried about the... In order to really like be a menace, you have to have thumbs.
Yes. Yeah,
otherwise, true. How are you going to manipulate anything in your universe to like make weapons and spaceships and stuff?
I get it. So, do you think a major sign of intelligence, unless you're aquatic, because I mean, there's octopus and dolphins, right?
But they're never going to take over the world because they don't have thumbs.
Yeah, that's true. They don't have thumbs, man. Get it together, guys. Two thumbs up. Every villain.
I'm stoked on. When AI finally figures out how to talk to dolphins, because they're working on it, and they're making progress, and it's a trip. Like, dolphins have their own language, we just don't know what it is.
Yeah,
but if we can get AI to decipher it, mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to be a trip.
What do you think? I mean, we're poised to learn from it.
I don't know. I have no idea, man. Maybe they are like way more intelligent than us, and they just don't have thumbs.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like maybe they're not. Maybe they're just like a bunch of dolphin gangs running around wreaking havoc on sharks and be like, hey, fuck you, shark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're gangster for that, for sure. Oh, I'm excited for that. AI, there's so much potential for good and bad, obviously. I mean, there's just always going to be people that, you know, like you said, like there's people hoarding that technology. I'm like, well, is that to maintain power and money and status?
Of course.
And that, you know,
there's always going to be that. It's part of human nature.
Yeah. How are you implementing AI in your day-to-day life?
Well, I had ChatGPT write me 12 guitar lesson scripts for
get out. Hell yeah.
And I was reading through them, like, this actually isn't bad.
Yeah.
I could probably just use this and make a 12 guitar lesson series.
Right? Yeah. Because then you can retort or reply with, like, okay, but correct this or do that.
Or I'll just make the corrections. Right? But, like, it literally in a minute and a half spat out 12 complete episodes on all the things that I would have made a bullet list to write an episode for, or a lesson for. It totally did it. And I was like, all right.
Okay.
Save.
Here we go. Yeah, right.
But it's good for stuff like that. And it's good for the artwork. I like a lot of the artwork.
Mm-hmm.
It's just got a cool look to it.
Where do you go for the artwork? Is that still
ChatGPT? There's Mid Journey. No, well, they have their Dolly. I think it's Dolly.
I'm not sure. I'm ignorant.
But then there's Mid Journey. There's a bunch of different ones that are really good.
Yeah.
They're not free. The free ones are fine too, but they're just, you get like 5 seconds of video, that's it.
Gotcha. Okay.
So
something a little bit more in depth, a little bit more pro, then yeah, spend some money.
Yeah,
and get it.
Where the only real issue is that they're gonna have 6 fingers. But everything else looks totally great.
You're like, hey, thanks for the image, can you remove one finger?
Yeah, I'm good enough with Photoshop, I'll just do it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you're a man of many trades for sure.
But I think a lot of people are going to be out of a job, like newscasters or game show hosts.
Lawyers and all that.
Maybe even lawyers, yeah.
Game show hosts, don't tell me that. I'm doing that on the side.
Obviously, the porn industry is going to be struggling.
It would, right? Well, I guess you still need
the... Which is probably good for people's mental health if they not do that.
But
what else are they going to do?
It is. Tell me, I feel, no matter how many times I'm just like, oh, it's just... Oh yeah, you know, it's been a while. I just, you know, you bang one out, and I'm just like, I never feel good afterwards. I'm just like, why?
I haven't watched it in years, And
my hat's off to you too.
Yeah. Well, being in a good relationship helps a lot.
Yeah. You know, it does. It really does. And then that's where like the extra guilt comes from, where it's like, I didn't really need that. We're like, why did I like, it's almost like how I feel with like snacking. I mean, you worked in a health food store. I'm trying to be healthy.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
yeah, so like,
why did I go for that snack?
I don't snack.
what are you on right now? I mean, are you doing like OMAD?
Just lost 50 pounds because the pandemic got me.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And I got up to like 250. I'm like,
ooh.
My pants wouldn't button.
Can you tell me what you like? 6'1", 6'2"?
6'1".
Yeah.
And my pants wouldn't button. And Diane's like, why don't we go get you some extra larges? I'm like, no. Hell yeah, no.
That's what it takes.
I will not give in.
Yeah.
But that was the straw that I was like, all right, fine. And all I did was intermittent fasting. And I eat a high fat, high protein breakfast every day.
Are you doing 16-8s? Or 12-12?
12-12. Actually, it's 14-10.
Gotcha. Okay.
So
14 fasted, 10.
Yeah, 14 overnight. And then 10, I won't eat until I get home after work at like 8:39.
Nice. And then, so you do high fat.
And then I eat at like 8 o'clock the next morning.
Gotcha. And you do high fat, low protein, you said? Or
high protein, high fat.
High protein, high fat.
Yeah. Okay. So bacon, egg, sausage.
Yeah.
Steak and eggs. I had a double cheeseburger for breakfast, right?
With the bun?
No bun. Or I'll make a cheeseburger salad.
Cheeseburger salad? Oh, yes.
If I want a little more fiber. I have a garden, so like I'll just pull out whatever out of the garden.
What's the key with gardening in Arizona, man? Because, dude, anytime I try to do anything, it just... So
in the summer, a lot of people use sunshades, but, like, I'm too lazy.
Yeah.
So I just let whatever is going to get cooked by the sun get cooked by the sun.
Gotcha,
and in the winter, I also let whatever is going to get frostbit get frostbit because I'm way too lazy.
That's your offering to the earth. That's what you're doing.
And I'll just compost it. So, like this last winter... like 75% of everything got killed off.
Oh shit!
In one night during a frost, so I just shoveled it all up into a pile and composted that, and then you know.
Well, I guess that would make your compost more nutritious too, right? For the next your next plant.
I compost pretty much all of our food waste.
Yeah.
Most of our paper and cardboard and stuff like that, you can compost all that.
Yeah.
And now that they use like soy-based inks for most things,
okay,
instead of petroleum-based inks, it's like fine. It composts really well.
Nice.
So newspapers, if you still read those.
Yeah.
But like even the corn peanuts, the corn starch peanuts, you can compost those. So you don't have to throw them in the trash. Yeah. So like I kind of set up this grid where when I start a section of garden and then I start a section of compost.
Gotcha.
And when that section of compost is piled up, I cover it in dirt and 30 days later I'll plant there.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then there's already a next section of compost, right? Mm-hmm. So my garden kind of moves across all this compost areas.
Perfect.
And then when I get to the end of the designated amount of space, which is like 25% of my yard, I'll start over. And I start composting there.
Mm-hmm.
And 30 days later, I'll move it over. And I'll have these few strips going all the time.
Dude, you have to give me a lesson on that.
And I put it right in the ground because I don't want to deal with boxes, potting soil. Like, I don't want to deal with any of that. Right. And I don't want to deal with a compost turner. So I just dig a hole, put all the waste in there for a month.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Bury it for a month, and then you're ready to plant.
That's beautiful. Yeah, we got it's all paved back there, so I'd have to figure out some boxes and whatnot. But
well, boxes are cool too. I just didn't want to spend the money.
Yeah,
and you know,
for sure.
And then you're dealing with all the same problems anyway, as far as like pests and Bermuda grass and weeds.
Gotcha. What vegetables or fruits survive best in your backyard?
Things that I don't have to do anything to are onions, peppers. Right.
Bell peppers, jalapeno peppers.
Well, the bell peppers are a little finicky, but the jalapenos and all the spicy stuff, it grows fine. I never have to do anything to it. I just water it. Potatoes I have forever potatoes because I dig up a bunch of potatoes and the ones that you miss, they just make more potatoes. So like a lot of the potatoes are just regenerating on their own. The onions, they like leave their seeds. And I haven't planted onions in like 2 years, but I always have onions.
Damn. These are yellow, white, red?
like the green onions.
Green onions. Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Oh, gotcha.
Those yellow white ones, if I want, then I'll just plant those. I buy like seeds off of Amazon, like heirloom seeds, nice. Organic stuff.
Oh, good, good. Is it, I found out, I didn't know that, but the library has a seed library too. You can check out stuff.
They do. I just haven't been there.
Yeah.
I've gotten compost from the city.
Really?
And it wasn't bad, but I noticed there was a bunch of little plastic pieces in it.
Yeah.
So I only did
that.
They
don't do the best.
Yeah, I only did that once.
Mm-hmm. What got you in that? Is that some of the training you received like at a young age as well? Or
no. Yeah. I guess it is kind of tied to that because reading ingredients labels, right? And then all the chemicals that they use for conventional farming.
So many.
My dad's an organic farm inspector.
Gotcha.
In addition to the health food store and all this other stuff. And
So he would see just like people just trying to take the easy route as far as like putting pesticides on everything.
Well, yeah. So he's big into organic. He thinks everything should be organic. He's testified before congressional committees to make sure they put in laws protecting organic so that you can't just, and they've eroded it over the years. So even something labeled organic can still have GMOs in it.
Yeah. Just a sticker.
Right. Or, it can even have, other stuff that's not supposed to be in it now. Yeah. It's in it because they label it something else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you can't really even trust that 100%. I mean, it's better than just buying regular.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also expensive, natural. Right? Yeah, I have this garden where I get organic lettuce, and which that also, by the way, just grows everywhere. It's like a weed.
Mm.
Once it gets going and it seeds and it like the seeds go everywhere and you have lettuce everywhere all of a sudden. Carrots, same thing. But the carrots go wild like after 2-3 generations and they start getting all these fingers off of them and they're not like carrots anymore.
Interesting. Are they still edible? Or are they still like...
Yeah, they get rooty. So they get more woody and harder to... Gotcha. Right? But the first couple times... Because the carrots that we're used to, those like... conical ones that Bugs Bunny eats, those are hybrids. They're not natural.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And you can't get a natural carrot.
Like that.
Right? And so it might be an organic hybrid, but it's still a hybrid.
Yeah.
So after a few generations, it reverts back to, it's kind of like wild pigs.
The wild pigs, yeah.
You know, even though wild pigs do it like...
overnight
almost,
right?
In 5 years. Yeah, they'll turn back into a boar. And I think maybe even just a couple years.
Yeah.
The same pig.
Deep. What are your go-to proteins then? Are you just everything's on the table?
Chicken and beef, but yeah, I eat a lot of everything's on the table. I'm not picky.
Yeah.
Luckily.
Gotcha.
So I don't like the grains and the seeds, you know? And I stopped eating cereal years ago because I found out how toxic it is for your brain.
So crazy, man.
Yeah.
And it's part of just like so many of ours daily lives or mine. It was, I could probably count on one hand the many times I've eaten cereal in like the last 5-6 years.
Yeah.
You know, but
especially the puff stuff is the worst. Like the pressed flakes maybe acceptable for a brief period, but like the puffed corn puffs and all that stuff, the high temperature and pressure changes the proteins into toxic proteins.
Yeah, trying to do that. So you're talking about like all the Cocoa Puffs, Fruity.
Yeah, all the puff stuff. Puffed rice.
We love, yeah.
Rice Krispies.
Mm-hmm.
Cheerios. Those are puffed.
Oh, yeah, those are. And they're promoted as heart healthy, dude.
I know, right? Damn. But they cause inflammation.
Yeah.
So like it's going to give you hardening arteries and higher stroke.
At the end of the day, I think that's 90% of our health problems is inflammatory foods.
I agree.
Inflammatory foods, man. Yeah, I just did a 3.5-day fast last week.
Excellent. I do that once a year.
Yeah.
Maybe twice, but definitely once.
Well, I'm stupid, so I'm doing it every 2 weeks for 3 months. So we'll see.
That's not bad. Yeah,
no.
It's totally fine.
I know people do it all
Steve
the time.
Vai does it every, like, 3 days out of a month. Every month he does it.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So essentially, I'm just as a test to myself, and then I'll kind of see how I feel and proceed from there. It's just like during COVID, I did a challenge to do 100 push-ups a day for 100 days straight.
I got to get out on that challenge.
Yeah. Well, and I afterwards,
so
I told
one of
myself,
the things, like, because I wake up and I do get on the computer for the trading.
Yeah. Oh,
that's and right. then I go to... work and I sit in a car or bike on the way to work, and then motorcycle, not you know, it's definitely no exercise in my life right now.
No,
no. That's, I think, is the biggest thing that I'm keep telling myself to get off my ass and do something every day. But
well, just set 20 there. Minutes. Just set 20 minutes aside, right before you day trade or in between day trading. And
yeah, no, I'm gonna have to do it before I do anything. Otherwise, it's like,
yeah,
you get sucked into the computer.
That's good. No, that's my schedule right now is to get up at 6:30 and then do at least 30 minutes of something, some movement, some stretching, something to get going. You see I got the weights.
Yeah,
there.
I don't know why I've never done yoga in my whole life. I've been surrounded.
You've
by
never you. Done yoga?
I've done it like twice,
but like never been like practicing regularly. And you're from Hawaii.
And yeah, and I've been surrounded by yoga teachers growing up.
You got long yoga hair.
I even own yoga pants. No, yeah. I don't own yoga pants, but I do have a yoga mat.
Yeah, there you go.
But I never like did it more than a couple times, and yeah. It's like, why not? I don't know.
What was it? Is it the holding part of it, or
it's not even hard? It's just like, I don't know
that's
why.
I'm getting at. Like, do you think that maybe just like the sitting there and doing the postures, maybe you'd want something more? Because there is like different types of yoga.
Well, I do prefer weightlifting, but which I used to get loading gear, yep, like 4 or 5 times a week. I would be loading 50 and 100
pounds.
Yeah,
your own roadie for sure.
And so I always felt like that was minimum enough.
Yeah,
but now I don't really do that anymore either. So,
what's your rig right now? Like, what's your like my this is my go to rig? Your guitar and amp and
so. My favorite is these two Music Mans. They're 75 pounds a piece and I run them stereo, right? Plus all my guitars, depending on the show, I'll bring anywhere between 2 to 6 guitars to a show.
So the Music Mans are identical amps?
Yeah. Gotcha. One's a 74 and one's a 75.
Oh, wow. Badass. 112s, 212s?
212s. It's the HD 130.
Okay.
The 212 combos.
Yeah,
they sound amazing. They never let me down. They're super workhorses. They're like, other than somebody dropping one one time, they like never break.
Yeah,
you know,
heck yeah. And so are you doing the stereo setup for just more volume and more coverage, or are you like,
oh, I have stereo effects in the pedal chain, right? And then about halfway through it breaks out into stereo, and everything after that is stereo.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes off to the two amps.
Gotcha.
So I can like have one be all fuzzy and another one just be regular overdrive or clean, and send the delay to one and not the other if I want. Dude, or have it bounce back and forth, which is a real trip.
Yeah.
It's disorienting, to be honest with you. You never do binaural beats with the headphones?
No.
Oh, it's great. I guess it's a great way to meditate, too. Oh,
okay.
But it'll send two different frequencies, and your brain will put them together. So it makes this rhythmic, and it tunes your brain waves.
What?
It's super awesome.
You got to send me more info on this.
Okay.
I need
binaural beats. And there's a bunch of apps that do it, but I'll send you one.
Yeah, please, man.
So the delay on the two amps across the stages almost gives me that. If you stand in the middle, it almost gives you that kind of like like heady feeling.
Yeah.
So I like it a lot.
Well, shit, man.
It's totally worth the extra effort to carry those fuckers.
And you get the workout, man.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. But I haven't played a lot out lately. So what I've done is scaled back everything to get on a motorcycle.
Yeah.
So I bought a little tiny Orange, and I can strap a guitar on there and a lap steel, and I can go to a gig that way.
Nice. You're doing lap steel too. I mean, first inclination would be like, okay, so you're doing some country, or are you using that in...
I've done country, but, you know, I'm not... I wouldn't...
Yeah.
I'm just probably better at country guys in Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Before you call me. But I love blues a lot, so I'll do a lot of blues and original tunes. I'm a songwriter, so...
Yeah, you're writing on the lap steel. What's it?
In fact, I think... I Am Hologram just asked me to do.
Hell yeah.
On the ninth, what is it? Where is it?
And what is that? Is it a 10 string that you have?
No, it's just a lap steel, 6 string.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay. Lap steel.
Probably like an open G, open C?
Open G, almost always open G. And
is that you sing better in that key, or just for a lot of what you do?
June 1st would be the show.
June 1st?
Yeah.
Where at?
I don't know.
Hey, it's all right.
Linger Longer?
Yeah, you'll let me know.
The Linger Longer Lounge.
Linger Longer Lounge.
Yeah, you should come.
Yeah, I want to check it out. I haven't heard about So down to check you out, check out the spot. Yeah. June 1st. I do.
Yep.
That. Send me that binaural beats. Send me that info.
All right. What was your question?
I think, was it the Lapsio that you sing? It's in G.
Oh yeah. It's almost always in G. Cause like, unless I really want an open chord to match whatever song, I just play where it is. Right. And I can make major and minor changes and sevens and stuff.
Oh, the beauty of knowing theory.
Yeah. Well, that's the funny thing. Like, I didn't know what I knew when I was telling you I was nervous about teaching. It's like, I didn't know what I knew. And then as I was teaching, I was like, oh, I know this. Or I'd be like, oh, I got to teach this tomorrow. So I'd look it up. I'm like, oh, I already know this. You know what I mean? I didn't know that it was stuck in there somewhere.
Yeah.
So that's why I was nervous.
Dig it out. Yeah. You dig it out. That's the thing about teaching someone, man.
Yeah.
You know, it solidifies the information in your mind.
Definitely. It made me a better musician. That's why I'm saying why did I wait so long? I should have been doing it from the very beginning. Dang. But,
one of my last guests was like that, where he rode a bike and he's like, I love it. And then he worked his way to being an instructor within like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And then he went scuba diving and he's like, oh, I love this. And then worked his way to be an instructor. And I'm just like, wow, what a way to just kind of like solidify something. Like,
yeah, just be the best, be so good at it. You can teach other people how to be good at it. Yeah,
exactly, man.
I think that's a great, like, I love riding a bike too. I 6 or 7 years ago, I got on a bike for the first time.
Yeah.
And, the first time I got on the freeway, I had a panic attack and I made it one exit and I had to get off and rest.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Because I was like, this is insane.
Well, yeah, on the freeway, was it here?
Or yeah, was it here.
And, you had to take it on the highway.
Well, like, it's a commuter. I've never gone on a pleasure ride. My car got repoed and I was like, I got to get to work.
Oh, gotcha. So then
and I can't afford payments or insurance. So I just dropped a couple grand on a bike.
Yeah.
With a friend's help. And.
So the bike you're riding right now, that's the first and only one you've had? Or
no, this is the third one.
Oh, gotcha. What happened to the other
two? So, well, actually, the first bike, PC bought me.
Oh,
and he bought it for $100, and he's like, here, it doesn't run, but you can have my garage until summer.
Oh, shit. Okay.
And so I rebuilt the entire thing and got it running, got it registered, and like I was like, okay, cool. I guess I'm a biker now.
Now you're rebuilding guitars, dude? Jesus. Or fucking motorcycles?
Yeah.
The animal.
I taught myself how to work on cars too. Like, yeah. So like the motorcycle was easy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause everything's just right there. It's exposed, right?
It's right there and it's 2 cylinders instead of 8. And it's like, you know, it's a few hundred bolts instead of 1500 bolts.
Yeah.
And, you know,
dude, I was on a podcast last week, with car guys and I am not a car. I don't know shit, dude. I barely changed my oil for the first time myself, like, 2 weeks ago with the help of my buddy. And it's just like, they were just like,
I think the last time I paid for an oil change, it was, $21.95 to tell you how long ago that was.
Holy shit. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I mean, sometimes you just need it. Hey, I don't have time. I don't have all the pieces right now, but you know.
Yeah, but when you can. I was going to do that this last time and it was like, it's $110.
Dude, it was crazy.
No way.
It is. Yeah, you really have to, they get you on like those maintenance plans.
Yeah, so let's say both air filters, a full oil change and a filter, I think ran me $40.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah, I went with full synthetic, which I don't know. Someone was like, you didn't have to, but I wanted to go a little bit longer.
I go with that because I want to go longer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, keep it cleaner.
And it's honestly a $5 difference.
Yeah. So
$5-$10.
So what happened with your first bike? So you got it for $100. You rebuilt it. You must have been like super intimate with it. You know, there's something
I rewired all the wiring because it didn't have a speedometer or front brakes or, you know, when I got it.
Damn, PC.
Well, he didn't know. He doesn't know.
Yeah. And it was $100.
And it was $100. And so, I rebuilt everything even on it. And then I was like, oh, there's not even a muffler on this thing.
Shit, yeah.
Like, so they were running drag pipes. So, like,
oh, shit.
I just, okay, just get it all legal.
Yeah.
Go get it registered. And then that lasted about 8 or 9 months, and it chewed up all the gears on a freeway on the way into work one day.
Uh-huh.
And I had, so first, second, and fifth gear were all chewed up. So I'd have to start it off in third gear to get home that day. I didn't ride it again.
Gotcha.
I went and bought another bike.
Oh, gotcha.
But I was like, I still had to ride home from
from
Mesa.
You just white knuckling the whole time?
No, I stayed off the freeway. And I only had third and fourth gear to work with.
And so, how does that operate? Was it like it starts off just really slow because
you got to rev it and like kind of tease the clutch until you get going, and you might as well start Flintstoning it too.
Here you go. Damn! How long? What was the drive home?
It took like an hour.
Oh shit, dude!
But I mean, I had the on that same bike I had before that happened. I had the throttle cable break.
Okay.
So I had to pull the broken throttle cable with my hand to get home.
Oh, right? Shit.
So I'm like pulling it, trying to run the clutch and only foot brake. Like, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm doing that, trying to get home.
Well, good thing you're a musician, dude. So you can balance all the fucking things you got to do. Ah, damn. Yeah. So you ride it home. Then you're like, I got to go out buy another bike. Where is that first bike? Did you just...
It's in my backyard.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's I'm cool. going to... I don't know. I told my daughter if she wants to rebuild it, she can have it, but I'm not going to do it for her.
Yeah.
You gotta earn that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. She'll be better for it.
Yeah.
For sure. And then your second bike, what?
It's a Honda Shadow, mm-hmm. 1100. So I went from this little 250 that barely did 75 miles an hour to this 1100 cc that would do like 120.
Beast.
It's a cruiser, so it's not like I know the sport bikes, which is my next bike, by the way.
Okay,
but they'll do like 180.
Yeah.
God forbid.
Yeah.
Please, yo, don't future yo, don't do that.
Don't do it. You got a daughter.
I know, but I want to go to the track with it. That's why I want a sport bike. I just want to take it to the track and kind of get all my jollies out there.
Is there a specific track you're?
I don't know. To? Honestly, I don't know.
Yeah, there's the Phoenix one. Then there's the Wild Horse Pass one or
that's like a drag.
That is drag, a drag right? one. Then there's the one off of Dead Cow Road, the road that goes from Maricopa to Gila Bend that I see a lot of sport cars on. But I don't know if there's a specific bike one.
Some of them let you mix cars and bikes, which is weird, but whatever.
Yeah, just don't take it to the skate park, right?
Yeah, honestly, I want to go to the track because otherwise I'll end up doing that on the street, which is stupid.
Yeah, get it, go out,
get, there, it, get out it out where it's supposed to, where I can load up on safety gear and leathers and do it that way.
How many like close calls? I know there's always close calls when you're on a bike, but like what are
at least once a week somebody's pulling into my lane.
Yeah.
And or like I almost got hit by a mail truck.
Oh shit.
Coming out of a parking lot. And
but luckily nothing you haven't had to lay down the bike or anything like that?
No. Just your normal like dropping it when I was learning. I dropped it a bunch of times.
Yeah.
Just learning how to deal with the weight because like it's all balance. You can't muscle that around.
Yeah. No.
I don't think even a big bodybuilder guy could muscle 600 pounds of motorcycle around.
Yeah.
Right? You got to like use the balance and the clutch and the engine to do everything. So learning that whole thing was like I didn't get my license for a year and a half because I would have failed.
Oh, gotcha.
Then I got a ticket, so I had to go get it.
How did you get a ticket? Where they were just like, I suspect
because I was doing 120 on the freeway,
yeah,
bro.
Baby.
Yeah. I don't know if the guy was being nice or if he was like serious about not being able to get a tow truck and arrest me, but he's like, today's your lucky day. And I'm like, all right, thank you very much. And I did the speed limit all the way home.
Yeah. Did you have your hair up? Because you might have been like, you hippie. No, it's fine. No,
well, you got to tie it up. Otherwise, it turns into a big fucking rat's nest in the wind.
Yeah. It's all blown out.
Yeah.
Is that the longest you've had your hair?
No. I've had it down to where I would sit on it.
Oh, shit. And you.
But this is 5 years of not cutting it.
Is it better for headbanging? Is that how you keep it?
It would be, except my neck can't handle that anymore.
Is it fused? It gives
me whiplash.
Oh shit, man.
Yeah, I don't know. Like you're supposed to be able to put your chin on your shoulder, right?
Yeah.
Right? And that's a sign of like a healthy spine.
Oh, okay.
And look, I can't really.
Yeah.
I can't really do that. Like guys will be able to supposed to be able to put it back here.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh, dude.
But you can get farther than me. I can barely touch to my shoulder.
It's because I don't say no that often, man.
A bunch of injuries from like mountain biking and surfing and jiu-jitsu.
It's all badass. Still the mountain biking, jiu-jitsu. Dude. All right, let's talk about jiu-jitsu. what, when, where, and why?
Because it's my favorite of the martial arts. I've also done karate and judo.
Yeah.
And a little kung fu, but jiu-jitsu is my favorite because the grappling, like any of the fights that I have been in,
mm-hmm.
you know, somebody, one of us got in a punch and then the rest of it was like wrestling on the fucking ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I was like, fuck this. I'm going to get good at that.
Yeah.
You know, don't fight kids though. It's never worth it. You know what I mean? And like when I was younger and stupider, you just think, why not?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, you're being tested. I got to stand up for, you know, my ego and pride.
Yeah, no,
and
there's nothing that ever, looking back on it, none of it was ever worth any of it.
Really? Yeah.
Whether I won or lost, because I've won and lost both, won and lost.
Yeah.
It's like, didn't matter. It wasn't worth it.
Yeah. And that was that before you knew jiu-jitsu?
No.
Gotcha.
Well, yes, some were and some weren't. But,
oh, gotcha.
But I haven't been in a fight since I was like 22, 23.
Yeah. De-escalation tactics, man.
Yeah. It's much better to not do that.
Are you...
Even though I'm always prepared for it. It's my last resort. It'll always be self-defense at this point.
For sure. For sure. What degree of belt did you get to?
Honestly, if I had to start over and go to a dojo now, I'd consider myself a white belt.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
But I did make it to purple. At the time.
Yeah.
But that was 15, 20 years ago. 20 years. Actually, 20. Oh my God. It's over 20 years ago.
Now. Oh, damn. Okay.
So.
And how often were you going then? I mean, I was gone
every week for a number of years.
Yeah. Like once a week or?
Every week, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll get you there for sure. Hammering them down.
And I've broken, you know.
Not from jiu-jitsu, just fighting.
One was from breaking boards in class. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So.
Yeah.
But I was always protective of this hand because of the guitar.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
All right. What was the other thing you mentioned? The mountain biking. That's one thing I almost got into as my kids were, my first child was being born. Like I was shopping bikes and then just never pulled the trigger on it. But are you still doing it?
I have not done that in a long time either. Like I said, you know, a motorcycle, I haven't had a car. Right, to take a mountain bike somewhere. So I'd have to ride. Well, I used to ride when I first moved to Phoenix. I used to ride to work from downtown Phoenix to Scottsdale and back
on your bicycle.
Yeah, that was my only transportation when I first moved here.
Gotcha.
And then like that bike broke because I had it for so long. It rusted out.
Nice.
But I don't know. In LA I used to ride too.
Yeah.
When I didn't have a car, I'd go. And that was 22 miles a day I'd ride.
Yeah.
Damn. That was commuting. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, 22 miles in what, 3 hours?
No, I'd make it in 45 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would during traffic, I'd be faster than a car.
Yeah, you're cycling. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I was thinking the motorcycle.
Yeah. But, and then LA actually has great trails, like right out of where my backyard was.
Yeah.
I could, like, in 5 minutes, I'd be on a trail I could ride around there. So that was a lot of fun. I don't want to buy a bike.
Yeah.
I guess I've gotten lazy, dude.
It's all right.
You know what I mean?
It's all right. It's all right.
As I've gotten lazy, I guess I got older. I don't want to lift as many things.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So, tell me about this, the day trading thing. What was the first inclination where you were like, okay, let me give
In 2009,
okay,
I tried to do the Bitcoin thing,
yeah,
and I couldn't figure it out. Uh-huh. After about 2 weeks, I gave up.
Yeah,
and every time I think about it, I kick myself. I'm like, you dumbass!
You should have. You should have stuck it out.
Yeah, I should have stuck it out and figured it out. So, like in this 2018 or whatever, I bought some cryptos and made a few thousand bucks, and I was like, okay, cool. And then I lost a few thousand bucks.
Yeah.
Okay, not cool. Yeah. But I was like, intrigued by it, and like, you know, and everybody tells you to invest in the stock market, and I'm like, mm-hmm. That's just kind of like gambling. Like it's like buying a scratcher almost. Yeah. And like it might go up, it might go down.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I would much rather be in control of when I make money.
Yeah.
And so that's why I wanted to get into the day trading thing. And honestly, like I said, it's the hardest, easy way to make money because won and lost thousands of dollars in a week. Yeah. and then like been like, what the hell did I just do?
Yeah, yeah. And digging yourself out.
And yeah, and I'm all depressed and like and then I'm just like, okay, again, thinking back to that time I gave up on Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm like, okay, don't give up this time. Don't do it. And so like over the last 4 years I've gotten to a point where I feel like I could take a few thousand dollars and turn it into a few hundred thousand dollars. And like I said, not overnight.
Yeah.
And not necessarily without a mistake.
Uh-huh.
And maybe not some backpedaling, but it feels good.
Yeah.
Being able to be independent like that financially.
Sure. What are you using? Is it Robinhood or what's the...
No, I use exchanges and...
Yeah. The webs, like if I had somebody handing myself the website.
No, like Binance. And so I trade a lot of cryptos. And then there's a couple of like off exchanges that let you trade stocks.
Mm-hmm.
But crypto's 24 hours a day. So, you know.
Is that the edge it has over like the standard one?
Yeah. So you can trade at any hour.
Yeah.
So if you work days, you can trade evenings and or early morning. So I get up at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Dang.
And
what are you reading, reports and...
No, I just read charts. Everything you need is in the charts.
Yeah.
It's either price action or some indicators that can give you an edge. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, without the edge, you're just gambling. It's a 50-50.
Yeah.
But if you can read the data, it gives you an edge. So now suddenly your odds are 60-40.
Gotcha.
And then with the hardest thing to learn was risk management.
Okay.
So, because you can be, I would be correct a lot of times, but before it would go my way, it would go the other way and I would get spooked. And gotcha. Like the emotional thing, like mm-hmm. controlling your emotions mm-hmm. and, you know, putting your stop loss too far or moving it. Like,
yeah.
you know, so you end up losing more and more. And
yeah.
It's like, wow, it's going to, and then it would turn around on you. As soon as I got liquidated, it would go the direction I wanted. I was like, okay.
Yeah. Trusting your initial intuition.
Yeah. But then not jumping in too early or not putting a stop loss in a place that I'm comfortable with the amount of money I might lose. And
loss? Like where you put something in
yeah,
there?
Yeah. So if I enter here, but the price goes down to here before it goes up or it might just tank, right? Yeah. So a stop loss, you set it wherever you want. And it, as soon as the price hits that, it sells your shit. Gotcha. And you only lose this much instead of
the way down
that much or all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But watching a $2,000 account go to zero in 45 minutes is just like, I don't know. I do not want that to happen ever again. So, it's a lot of fun though. And when you finally figure out some type of strategy, cause there's a lot of different strategies, whichever one works for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And again, no matter what it is, it's the risk management that is key. That keeps you from, cause if you go to Vegas, and you're like, oh, okay, I got $2,000 to have fun with in Vegas. And you put it all on black on the first one.
Yeah.
And you lose. It's like, you're out of the game.
And yeah. There goes your weekend.
Yeah. So what you want to do is protect your capital and just put a little bit here. And then whatever you're winning, you can be reckless with.
That's true. Right.
You know, but, I've developed a bunch of rules, like no more than 3 losing trades in a day. I have to walk away at that.
So you'll just call it. You'll be like, okay,
yep,
I did
done.
It.
I'll come back done. Tomorrow.
Yeah, restart.
Yeah. Like I lost a lot of money trying to short NVIDIA at like it made this huge move.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in my mind, I'm like, there's no way it's going to go higher. And so I was committed to that hypothesis prematurely.
Yeah, yeah.
Now it's about $950.
Oh, right? Damn.
So, but I had like, I went in heavy on a short and my stop loss was bigger than it should have been. So I lost like $1,500 on one trade on that.
Yeah.
You know,
and now
live and learn.
So I guess, so what you're saying is you should have retained that those options that you had.
Well, I should have made the stop loss tighter and I should have read the data better,
gotcha.
You know, and not, and realized that it didn't have to go down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. This is like a year and a half ago when it was.
Gotcha. But each one's a lesson, man.
It is. And you just don't make the same mistake twice. Eventually, you'll get to a point where you're not making those mistakes that totally fuck you.
Yeah.
And then practice, like a paper trade, right? That's free. And you can make all the mistakes you want.
Ah, okay.
So,
Interesting paper trade. You have to send me a bunch of this stuff, man. I'm gonna need notes from you.
You got it. But I highly recommend anybody who wants to start just paper trade. And the problem was, because I tried that in the very beginning, you don't get the same rush or connection that it's real because it's fake money, yeah, right?
Exactly.
So then after losing my real money,
mm-hmm,
now I have this connection where I can really feel like it's winning or losing a trade,
yeah,
with the fake money. Not that I recommend you go out and lose money.
For sure.
But you will.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody does when you start out.
You need to take that as you're going into it. Be like, hey, this is going
to
happen.
Don't bet more than you're willing to lose because you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
And then my goal now is to take this demo account and with $3,000, turn it into $1 million.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the whole time I'm doing this, I'm also putting away every paycheck, a little bit of money,
yeah,
for when I'm ready,
yeah,
to just go in heavy.
Ooh, what a...
And so I mean, I got to fake money up to... like $23,000 into $25,000 in like 6 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. So, hell yeah, man.
It's doable.
Yeah.
Totally,
yeah,
doable.
Yeah. And you got your systems in place and, yep, you know,
and I'm learning every day.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I got obsessed with guitar.
Yeah.
This is how I'm getting obsessed with this. Mm-hmm. So every day I'm watching videos, I'm reading. I hardly ever read anymore. I haven't read a lot since college.
Yeah.
But, I'm reading about, you know, trading strategies,
yeah, and this strategies, and that, and techniques, and
yeah,
what to look out for.
Yep.
Dude, epic.
So if somebody wants to try it, you got to become obsessed with it because you're up against professionals, yeah, right? And you're some amateur walking into the poker table,
mm-hmm,
right? In the World Championship of Poker. That's what this is, because it's the entire world, millions and millions of people, institutions, algorithms, computers, all designed to take your money.
Yeah, exactly. Walking into the
and
casino.
If you think you're gonna go in there without having an edge and just be like, oh yeah, I'll make some money and piece of trade,
mm-hmm,
it's not gonna happen.
Yeah,
they're gonna take your money.
Don't do it willy nilly. Don't do that willy nilly.
So you gotta develop some type of edge, whatever it is. And like I said, if you just blindly go in there, it's 50-50. Let's say that was the odds, because it could go up or down. Right? We don't know. We don't know what the market's gonna do.
Yeah. But
then if you have an edge, like you develop a system of either price action, so you're reading the chart, the candlesticks, or you got a system of indicators that tell you when it's okay to take a trade.
Yeah.
That say, like, every time it's done this in the past, it's 60% of the time it does that. And you can bet on it and then set your stop loss accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now suddenly you're winning 10% more than break even, right?
So
you're getting a 10% return.
Yeah, every time, which is great.
Which may be more than actual 10%. It depends on how much you bet, right? You could double your money every time.
Yeah.
When it does go your way, it could go your way big, right? And then when it goes against you, you make sure that it only goes against you small.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Those balances. Dude, a lot of that stuff just goes over my head. But,
well, it was like, I don't know, a lot of the AI stuff goes over my head,
mm-hmm,
and I want to use it to, like, but I don't know how to get started with it.
Yeah.
And then,
but I can link you up with my buddy Alex that does a lot. He does websites and
I want to make my own AI server, right? And run it out of my house instead of using somebody else's machines.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I definitely got to link you up then. He's a wild man too.
Cool.
Yeah. I'll do that. Speaking of wild man, can we touch on, you mentioned your father, was that the same father?
You're talking about the Source family?
Yeah. If we can,
sure.
It's up to you.
I was wondering if you're going to bring it up.
I asked you if it was cool.
Yeah, it's cool. So my birth father is James Baker, the Yehoah Father Yod, mm-hmm, from the Source family. And, you know, he led a cult of about 150 people, I think, at the maximum.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the first vegetarian restaurant in L.A. And then he packed everybody up, moved them to Hawaii because they thought the world was going to end.
Yeah. What year would that been?
Like 74, I think.
Gotcha.
I was born in 75.
Gotcha.
And within a year, he had died. A hang gliding accident off of Makapu, which is... Funny, I used to surf there a lot. Yeah. And I'd sit out there and look at those cliffs and the beach where he died.
Dude.
Where he landed. He died later, but.
Yeah.
And I'd always just sit out there and think about it and, like, you know, how different things would be.
Yeah.
If he hadn't have made that decision that one day changed everything. So, I mean, I grew up in the aftermath of that.
Gotcha.
Like, I was a year old when he died, and then, whatchamacallit? Everybody kind of went nuts because their whole world was shattered, right? And I think all the hippies in the commune mm-hmm. were like, our leader's dead. What do we do? Almost nobody had the ability to think for themselves.
For sure.
Really, because, like, they were told what to do from the time they woke up to time he went to bed, and it was like they were like children, I think.
Yeah, it was their own solar flare, right?
Right, kind of. Yeah. Yeah, you could look at it that way. So then suddenly everybody's on their own, and it's like, what did they do? So I can't really fault, I think everybody did the best they could, you know, and mistakes were made,
yeah,
obviously. But, like, I just recently, last year, went back to Hawaii for a funeral, and a whole bunch of people were there from the Source family. And honestly, we had a good time together.
Oh, wow.
There's, like, I still think a lot of people are stuck in that, you know, spiritual kind of cult.
Yeah.
Because it's a cult. It was a cult of personality, man.
Gotcha.
You can't not say that. It has all the hallmarks of a cult, including a leader, a blind devotion, like, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And even my adopted dad, the guy with the health food store.
Yeah.
Like, it was years later, but I was like, you know, you're in a cult, right?
Oh, shit. You called him out.
And that was the first time it had occurred to him. And he thought about it. And he came back with, yeah, you're right. I was. And, like.
And how old were you bringing it to his attention?
I was like 20.
Yeah, okay.
Or 19, I think.
Yeah.
But, like, so 19 years later, and he still hadn't thought about it as a cult.
Yeah. You know?
And it's not that necessarily a cult like that is inherently bad. You know, I'm sure out of 150 people, you can't not have a couple of bad apples, which there were.
For sure.
But I think of all the cults in all the world, you know, this one had a good, like, objective.
Gotcha.
Was to make you healthy spiritually and physically.
Okay.
You know, they were into vegetarianism, which I'm not a fan of personally, but it worked for them.
Like, yeah. And it's being mindful, though. At least
it is being mindful. And meditation, physical exercise, like, they all had jobs at the restaurant, you know, so it wasn't like they were sitting around getting high all day. In fact, there was almost no drugs.
Okay.
And if you were, if you were disobeying the drugs rules or whatever, you'd be out for 30 days. You go be on your own, and then you could come back.
Ooh, okay.
So,
like, you're missing.
Like, they had some rules like that that I think were pretty good as far as trying to have a cohesive society of communal living. But, you know, honestly, this is one of the reasons that I hate communism, because some people did all, like, 20% of the people do 80% of the work.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And a lot of people were coasting
on the hard work of everybody else. And
I get that. And then, like, the communal property wasn't being taken care of equally. Like, some people would trash it and other people would clean it.
And was that in the aftermath of,
no, that was during, this was stories. Gotcha. My dad would tell me.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But
was there any, I mean, were they also looking at you as being, you know, his, a son, named after him, to be like, okay, well, maybe he can kind of come in and
So I don't remember this because I was a baby, right?
For
but
sure.
I think that there was a story told me that I was put in his throne with the scepter.
Yeah. Whoa.
You know, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, you people are crazy.
Yeah.
This is definitely a cult, right? not that they're not, you know, like, I like some of them dearly.
For sure. Well, they're all looking for meaning. They're all looking for a purpose.
As all we are, all, right? And, like, I found my meaning in music and my daughter and...
Yeah.
And a lot of my friends, like, being, like, able to try to forge a path forward in life, right? Like, I found that to be a good meaning. Like, I didn't need to have, like, I don't know. I guess like an outward, maybe I did though. Maybe during like the music thing.
And yeah.
The outward adulation mm-hmm. stuff that fed that type of ego.
For sure.
But all that kind of stuff is ego. And I've always recognized that. So I never tried to like give into it. I do enjoy playing a show for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's way better than playing a show for nobody, which I've done both. And yeah. I'll take a lot of people any day of the week.
Any day of the week, for sure.
But maybe that's why he did it. Because he liked
the energy. It has to be.
Being on stage and having a few thousand people beam their energy at you, it's intense. And it's a real thing. It's a real psychic phenomena.
And it's only for a moment versus, you know, he had it, you know, 24/7 because you're running
for,
this whole commune.
For years.
Yeah. This whole commune. And people aren't just there. You're not just there to entertain them. You're also giving them purpose, direction.
Yeah. That's the part that I think he was doing right.
Yeah.
He was giving purpose and direction. But, you know, power, it takes, I don't think he was able to completely resist the ego trip.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, yeah. And it's like it's natural that happens to us where it's like, okay, next thing you know, it's like, well, okay, all these people are relying on me. I must have, you know, you just start, you know, at first you might disbelieve it, but then after a while you're just like full sold on it yourself because it's like, well, everybody's coming to me.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead.
I mean, it would have been nice to be able to ask him these questions, what I mean? But he jumped off a cliff with a hang glider, but it didn't turn out well either way.
Do we know? Was it just a bad day to fly? Was it an issue with the hang glider?
They think it was some wind shear, and it dropped him. The story goes it dropped like 100, 200 feet, and then the wind caught him, and they think that ruptured his spleen. But I don't think they did an autopsy. So.
Yeah,
but he died a couple days later.
Dang.
From his injuries.
Gotcha.
Since they didn't believe in going to the hospital.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. That's a whole nother part of the story.
Damn.
It's like he could have lived.
Yeah. If you
had they gone to the emergency room,
did some intervention, man. Does your daughter happen to know the story?
No. When she's a little older, I'll sit down with there's a documentary that's pretty accurate, I think. It's called The Source Family. It was on Netflix for a while, and I looked for it recently, and I haven't been able to find it. I think, you know, Netflix rotates their stuff.
Yeah, they do.
But I'm sure there's a way to watch it. It's just called The Source Family.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll have to look at it. Like I said, I didn't, I had heard that, you know, I was like, oh, yo, it's cool. He's a dope musician, this and that. And then one of my buddies like, well, yeah, you know, his dad was like that. I was like, no, I didn't know. And so when I asked you, I never brought it up to you. Obviously, you know, that's just crazy. But, you know, when I asked you to come on too, I'm like, I do want to talk about it, but you know, I'm not going to do any research. I don't want to come in with my own.
Since we're, talking about music and stuff. So there was a Source Family band.
Oh shit. Okay.
Which if you want some like heavy stoner, rock.
Yeah.
Kind of psychedelics.
Okay.
That's like, is this bad or is this good? I can't tell, but it's definitely intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's your jam.
Okay. I have to check it out.
There's like 9 records.
Nine records. Damn. Yeah. There we go.
And like probably my favorite is called Penetration. Uh-huh. And it's him with kettle drums and bullets strapped across his chest.
Fuck yeah.
Because he's a World War II.
That's right. He was.
Yeah. He's killed hundreds of people.
So right before you got here, I was like, okay, I do need to just read a quick couple things. But yeah, he was. So his actions in World War II. I know you got to get going here.
No, like we got like 15 minutes.
Yeah. His actions in World War II. What was he known for?
So there was an article in the paper and like my adopted dad, he has it cut out in a scrapbook. And it chronicles what he did.
Mm-hmm.
So he was on the USS Chicago. And while it was sinking, everybody abandoned ship. And the Japanese were coming by with the planes and strafing the men in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had taken shrapnel, but he swam back to the ship, climbed all the way back up to the ship, was loading these 50-pound canisters of ammo to the anti-aircraft gun by himself with one arm.
Yeah.
And he shot down 13 Japanese planes and saved all the men in the water.
What?
Yeah.
Jesus. Whoa, dude. You are cut from a different cloth, my man.
Well, it's like, you know, everybody's got their own path. I had to live in a shadow, which I don't mind. It's a big shadow.
Yeah, right?
Or
for sure.
Big shoes to fill. I haven't tried to fill those shoes. I'm, you know.
Yeah.
I just want to play guitar.
Yeah, and you're instructing the next musicians of the world and people that are just, you know, having fun. Like, what's your youngest student and what's your oldest student?
Well, yeah. I've had students as old as 80 and as young as 7.
Yeah, the whole gamut, man.
Right.
You're doing it.
Yeah, a couple of the, like, a lot of times guys will come and be like, well, I just retired and I've always wanted to do this. You know, it's my dream to play this song. Yeah. Whatever, Hotel California. Whatever.
Yeah, I just want to come in and learn this one song.
Well, not just the one song, but it's like, that's my dream. That's my goal, is to be able to play this one song. And I've never had time to play guitar. And it's like, so some people, like, maybe I've had guys who played for 20 years but never got good. Mm-hmm. And they want to take it seriously because they're retired. Or I've had guys never picked them up. And they are devoted.
Yeah.
And they practice, right? And some of them make a lot of progress in their first year and others don't. And I think from talking to other instructors, I think sometimes, well, they say that if you don't start when you're a kid, you're at a disadvantage because those pathways aren't. And I'm like, well, maybe, but like, I think the devotion,
the time,
right? The time, if you're going to do something for a couple hours every day, you're going to get good at it.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it might take you 2 years. It might take you 5 years, but
yep.
My favorite thing to say is the difference between somebody who's good at guitar and somebody who's not good at guitar is the person who's good at guitar stuck with it long enough to get good at guitar.
To get, like, over those barriers and the plateaus and all that.
That's, yeah, and I've been playing for 35 years and I still practice daily. Yeah. I practice every day. I still feel like I'm getting better, mm-hmm, every day. I still feel like I'm making breakthroughs and things that, you know, while I can do all the things that I want to do on a guitar, there's like more conceptual things or maybe like a little bit more flashy stuff that, like, yeah, I'll see somebody do on YouTube and I'm like, oh, that's cool. And I'll try to learn it. And,
yeah,
and then I'll struggle with it for a week.
For sure.
Until I get it. I'm like, okay, cool.
Bang. There you go, man.
But I'm always trying to improve, you know?
That's good.
That part of the journey never stops.
Yeah.
And I think that applies to anything, whether it's...
all across the board, for sure.
Yeah.
It should be, you know, relationships.
If you like math, you're going to be doing math your whole life.
Yeah.
Whether or not you get paid for it.
And math is everywhere, honestly. It is.
Yeah.
You're doing it now with the day trading.
Yeah. That's true. There's a lot of Fibonacci in that. Yeah. It's freaky how accurate the Fibonacci is.
Bank on that and you can make it pretty
fun. Honestly, if you did it right, you could. You could just use the Fibonacci and make money if your risk management is right. Yeah. You know? But, there's like 101,000 other things that you could also pay attention to.
Tons. But most importantly, pay attention to yourself, your spirit, tu alma, your mana, whatever you want to call it, man. Yod, I'm going to get you to work, bro.
All right, brother.
Thank you so much for stopping in. Let people know how they can follow you online if you have an online presence. I'm not even sure if you do, man. You're this enigma.
Yeah, I get on Facebook like once a year.
Yeah.
But, The Finger of Yod, that's cool. My Facebook, so facebook.com/TheFingerOfYod. That's the page.
Perfect. Cool. Finger of Yod. That's all we need, man. Yod, thank you so much, man.
Right.
Thank you. Guys, until next time, adios.
Ciao.
That was awesome, man.